People have spent countless hours saving princesses, dodging bullets, or playing words with friends, all on computers. Recent advances in technology allow us to play these games on handheld devices anywhere and with anyone. And statistics on those playing computer games show a growing number of people are doing just that. According to GoGolf.com, the most popular smartphone activity is texting, followed by internet browsing and playing games. According to a survey by Google, the most popular activity for tablet users is gaming, followed by internet searches and email. Joining us to talk about computer games, who's playing, why we play, and applications for games beyond entertainment is Chris Boutz-Faubert, tech columnist at the Cape Cod Times. Welcome back, Chris.
Good morning.
We talk about how smartphones and tablet computers have influenced the number of people who now play computer games. But you also point to the invention of the touchscreen as a very important piece to this. Touchscreens are everywhere today, but the technology is relatively new. So describe how it's impacting gaming.
Well, it's actually a combination of two things. It's the touchscreen and the level that the hardware has reached so that it can generate intensely, visibly pleasing graphics. Mm. You take that combination, and you can see statistically when really the iPhone and the Galaxy, but when those began to promote their online stores, that the gaming resonated because of its high quality and the ease at which it can be played. The important thing about the touchscreen is that it leveled the playing field. Mm-hmm. The ability to manipulate a trackball or a D-pad on a phone was a barrier for some people, but yeah. Touchscreens, yeah. Anyone can use them.
Right. Well, I'm always slow to catch on with the new technology. So I would watch everybody playing these games around me, and I would think, why would you waste your time doing that? And of course, I have to say I've fallen into it myself. It's a lot easier to play Scrabble on the tablet than, you know, you've lost some pieces when you have your game at home. And so that's how I think I started with that. So I'm big into the word games. I have now advanced from Scrabble to Words with Friends, and now I'm a huge Word Chums fan. It's interesting to note that what games we're interested in playing has a lot to do with both our gender and our age. So what are some of the most popular games for the older demographic, and how does that break down along gender lines?
Well, the word games, actually social games, mm-hmm. tend to be the draw. The thing that really pulls older gamers in is the ability to interact with other people in real time, anywhere they are.
Right.
I think that if you look at a cross-section of today's gaming market, puzzle games, and what we would have called games of chance, along with social interaction games like Farmville, mm-hmm. and there's a game called Mafia. That tends to be, mm-hmm. The thing that draws in is a combination of the fun factor, which is clearly there, mm-hmm. and a perceived value, which is also clearly there, but also the social.
Right.
Gaminess.
Well, and I guess there's always this sort of etiquette, too, that goes with the games. People are playing for different reasons. I know in the word chum, sometimes I'm playing with people I know, and sometimes I play with random opponents. And when I'm playing with random opponents, I don't want to be asked a whole bunch of, well, where are you? And, what part of the country? And if they're not talking about the game, I boot them.
Yeah, no, that's pretty common, actually. Social networking, I don't think necessarily is about socialization.
Right.
But it's about knowing that you're playing with another person,
right.
and not against the
yeah,
machine.
Yeah, it's much more fun to play against a person.
Oh, absolutely,
than a machine.
Because they're,
yeah.
they're much more unpredictable. And that's going to play into something we're going to talk about in a little while.
Okay.
The folding app.
Right. Well, we want to know if you use your smartphone or tablet to play games. And if so, what are you playing? Give us a call at 866-999-4626. Or our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. And if you have children or grandchildren, do you let them play games on your mobile device or tablet? Give us a call. 866-999-4626. All right, so there's some research into why we play games, and scientists have found the three factors. And you talked a little bit about some of it. So talk about why we play.
Immediate self-gratification, the fact that these games trigger certain pleasure receptors and pain receptors in the brain. And when I say pain receptors, I mean the dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think increasingly, there's a kind of a bragging factor involved in it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even when you get that high score of, you know, whatever it is.
Well, it's not just that. You take typically the really popular games like Farmville.
Yeah, and I've never played Farmville. I know a lot of people do, so I don't know what that game is about.
Well, it's essentially a farming simulation, but it's modeled on a microtransaction system. So it's the game that Zynga really launched itself with. That's the company that makes it. And it basically consists of you expanding the size of your farm by completing quests and challenges. And and all the while gathering your friends on Facebook. Mm-hmm. That's really the centric, although Zynga has its own site that you can also play Farmville on outside of Facebook. But basically, Facebook is where your friends are, so you pull your friends into that game, and then your regular play session each day, you visit your friend's farm and do something to help them, and they do the same for you.
Yeah, you're answering so many questions for me because I have some of my relatives with them. I was thinking, what are they talking about? I don't play this game when they're asking me for a cow or something. I'm not sure what they're talking about. All right, so many of these games we say play on smartphones or tablets, and they're free. Or you can buy for a normal price from the App Store. But gaming companies are always, of course, looking for ways to make money, and they've gotten quite clever about how they do it. So talk about impulse games and this, what you call microtransactional games.
Well, the idea behind microtransactional games is to build in a game that can be played without actually spending money. It has to be able to be, or you won't draw in an audience. And it has to be a high-quality game, but in Farmville, you know, I don't mean to repeat the same game over and over again, but it's a great example. Mm-hmm. They built a game that anyone can play, that you don't have to spend money to play. You can get to the end game, if there is one, without spending a dime. But you can't get there with all the special animals or special buildings or special tools unless you spend money.
Mm.
So the gameplay experience is going to be different for the people who don't spend money than it is for the people who do. And statistically, this is a shocking number, but only 5% of the people who play these games actually pay to play them.
Interesting.
So 95% of the population is getting a free ride.
Yeah. Wow. So that I guess they're not as clever in that way, making some money on that.
I don't know. They're still making a lot of money.
Right. And you also see, I know I mentioned I play the Word Chums, and I actually have two different devices I play it on. So one of them, I get the ads. So that was the free one. And then the other one that I paid the $1.99 for, I don't have any ads on.
Yep. And that's why you paid for it.
Yeah. I paid the $1.99, and I actually wish I had done that on the other one.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because there is a split in the gaming demographic in which younger players are more prone to go with the free game, and older players understand that you get what you pay for.
Right.
And they pay for the convenience of not being.
Isn't that interesting? You know, and the types of games I would imagine that younger players are playing versus the older demographic are going to be different.
Right? Yeah. Well, the younger players tend, it's broken up between the sexes, of course, but the younger players tend to go after the action adventure and combat games. I don't mean to stereotype them, but it's true. And the older players tend to go after puzzle games, games of chance like poker and the casino slot games are very popular among older female gamers.
Right, and I would think trivia games would probably be there as well. So in many instances, the costs with these microtransactional games are hidden, so they can show up on your phone bill, and it can be hard to identify. You have a story about a child in the UK who racked up a huge phone bill for his parents simply by playing a game.
Cameron Croson, I believe, is his name. And his father actually was a PC, police constable. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting story because apparently he had taken his father's tablet and in just a couple hours had racked up £3,700.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And his father had no choice but to file a fraud complaint against his son in the hopes that the credit card company would reverse the charge, because Apple said flat out no.
Mm.
He charged it, you pay it.
Wow.
But then there was another case, a young boy, 5-year-old Danny Kitchen, who managed to rack up £1,700 in something like an hour playing a game called Zombies versus Ninjas. And Apple, I think, gracefully immediately refunded those charges because he's a 5-year-old.
Right.
The first boy, I think, was 12, and I think that's why they pitched such a fit about, you know.
So age is a key factor here.
It is, well, sure. And I'm sure that at least part of what caused Apple to refund the five-year-old is that in the UK, in Australia, in the United States, in Canada, pretty much all over the world, the governments are moving toward laws that require these companies to inform parents when a game has hidden microtransaction possibilities, because this is really a problem.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, you know, I've been amazed just looking at some of my younger nieces and nephews and the games that they play, the ability that they have, and the you know, they're little kids and they know their way around the iPad. That's always amazing to me.
They
know how
fast
to pull up these games. You know, the Angry Birds and what have you. It's and they can get to those top levels like that. You know, it's amazing.
Sure, they can play a video game, but they can't ride a bicycle.
Right. You got a good point there. So other times, gaming companies will automatically bill your credit card for some of the, we mentioned these microtransactions, and you don't see how much you are actually spending until you get your credit card statement. So how do they hide that from you, that you don't see, or you're getting charged X for what you're doing here?
Well, it used to be that way, that you didn't see the transaction until it appeared on your credit card. But now, almost uniformly, when you complete a transaction, the system generates an email to inform you of that transaction. And that's how parents can catch. Mm-hmm. I mean, it still only takes a couple hours to rack up, you know, thousands of dollars of charges, but at least you get some warning.
Yeah. Now, if you want to be sure that your child is not playing a game that will have hidden charges or costs, what can you do? How do you do that?
You read the game description, because now the law requires that they make that clear, mm-hmm. that there are hidden charges in it. And obviously, you pay attention to what your kids are doing, mm-hmm. and tell them don't.
Right. I've tried that. Don't. Doesn't always work.
I realize that's true. But if you're keeping an eye on them and you know which games they're playing.
Right.
Another way to do it would be to turn off network access before you hand them the device.
Mm-hmm.
That way they can't rack up charges.
That's a good point. Our toll-free number is 866-999-4626. We're talking about computer games. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. One of the things I noticed with this Word Chums game that I play is that anybody I play with has to have an Apple device.
Some games are platform dependent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't play with everyone.
No, and some games that aren't platform dependent still restrict who you can play with by the platform you're on. So they may have released an Android version of the game, mm-hmm. but you're not going to be playing an Android player on your Apple phone. It's nice. They're two mutually incompatible.
Do you see that changing down the line?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's going to reach a point where the games become platform transportable, or the companies are releasing a game for each platform and using a server-based system so that it doesn't matter what you're on, you can still hook in and play.
Because Words with Friends, I think you can play across different platforms, can't you?
I believe so.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems that when I was playing Words with Friends, I was playing with, you know, people with different – people who can't play Word Chums with me now, I was playing Words with Friends with. So some European government agencies are starting to take a strong interest in free-to-play games in an attempt to make them more transparent for users. Is there any indication that the U.S. might follow suit?
The U.S. is following suit.
It is.
The Federal Trade Commission is in the process right now. They have already passed rules that these companies must follow. And there was a survey that they conducted a few months ago, and they realized that some of these companies weren't following that rule,
mm-hmm.
where if their transactions and there's any possibility that the game will be of interest to a minor, it has to be clearly stated in the game's description and in the fine print, as well as the not-so-fine print.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these companies simply aren't doing that. So what I think we're going to see in the coming months is who gets charged. Mm-hmm. And then we'll know who complied and who didn't.
Right. You know? And, you know, you say read the fine print, but, boy, you get pages and pages of these rules and, you know, what you're signing up for.
But the law as it exists, or the policy, excuse me, as it exists right now, is that they have to make those disclaimers in a visible spot.
Yeah.
Not deeply
not
buried.
Deeply.
In the...
Okay. Gene is giving us a call from East Ham. Good morning, Gene.
Hi. I wanted to know, since iPads and iPhones and other mobile devices are becoming more prevalent in classrooms and other areas, are there good educational games or things that we could be downloading? I want to hear about some of the positive apps or games that we could be using on our devices.
Great question, Gene.
There are a lot of them, actually, and it's a growing segment of the gaming sector for the free-to-play and, unfortunately, and pay games. But the good bit is that with tablets and with the phones, particularly iPhone, a lot of these games are only $2 or $3. Mm-hmm. So you have to pay for it, but you don't have to pay much.
Right.
And
right.
And that's...
And so there are a lot of educational games then that are being used. And some schools are using them, right?
Yep. For mm-hmm. math instruction, there's reading and word recognition and alphabet instruction. And probably a game you're familiar with, Oregon Trail. No?
I don't know that one. Gene, do you know that one?
That brings back a lot of memory.
Yeah. Well, back in the 80s, that was the game that they put on the Apple II that were, you know, given to schools mm-hmm. here in the U.S. and elsewhere. And so a lot of adults will remember that. And it's kind of nifty that, you know, they can see their kids playing that game.
Yeah. Gene, great.
I'm going to have to go download that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. And gaming, not just for entertainment. There are many applications that are simulation games, like from flying a 747 to brain surgery. Then there's the Wii. And for listeners who aren't familiar with the Wii, tell us what it is and how a school system is using it.
Well, the Wii was the first next-gen platform to be released. Nintendo beat Sony and Microsoft to the release of their next-generation console a couple of years ago. But the Wii is basically what has set part of the standard for console gaming today. And that is, of course, with the wireless controllers mm-hmm. and motion sensing. So basically, it's a gaming console that frees you from, or untethers you from the cable, as it were. Now, it's interesting that I think Nintendo understood how this gaming console was going to be used because it promoted a lot of sports titles mm-hmm. for its launch. And yeah, that's what a lot of people almost exclusively use their Wii for, is Wii Tennis. Wii Golf.
Bowling.
Yep, bowling. And then there's a couple of different, I can think of right off the bat, bowling titles. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that you mentioned how it is impacting schools. Down in Florida and in some of the other southern states, there are schools that have replaced a lot of their gym programs with Wii programs.
I'm not so sure that's a great idea.
Well, you're getting a cardiovascular workout. And
is it the same, though, as if you were out there on the basketball court?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
But it does let them hire fewer staff, mm-hmm. which saves them money. So
right. Yeah, interesting. And also, games can be used for real-world problem-solving. Gamers can test the security systems of the Defense Department or even help scientists fold proteins. So talk about some of the real-world applications for games.
Well, you know, the protein folding is actually kind of interesting because it originally was a what was called an idle process application, mm-hmm. Similar to SETI, the search for extraterrestrial life or intelligence. But the folding at home is what the original was called. And it turned out that the computers were not very efficient at folding proteins. So they came up with a game. And the idea behind the game isn't so much to harness the power of humans to fold the proteins to do the research, but rather to teach computers how a human would do it.
Oh, wow.
So that the computer gets smarter and more efficient at folding the proteins.
Wow. That's
so
fascinating.
Yeah, they went from using idle processes to using idle time.
We're talking about computer games with Chris Boats-Faubert, tech columnist at the Cape Cod Times. We'd love to hear from you if you have a question, or if you play games on your smartphone or your tablet, what are you playing? Give us a call at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. You know, when Gene Calden was asking about some of the more educational games, I have a nephew who, it's amazing the things he has on his little tablet that, as you're saying, the counting games. I think there's something from, you know, one of the PBS shows.
Sesame Street.
Is it Sesame Street? Or is it, it could be, but where you have to find, like, the grapes and the apple. And
was that the Dora the Explorer?
I think it's Dora the Explorer, yeah. Now that you say that. Yeah. Yeah. But it's really amazing, the sort of interaction that they're, these little kids are having with these.
Kids pick it up really fast.
Oh, really fast. Yeah. It's amazing. It's really amazing.
I haven't seen any empirical data, but it's been suggested that that gameplay at a young age has a significant impact on the development of spatial mm-hmm. sensing and hand-eye coordination. So, I mean, I guess it's a good thing.
I'll tell you, my nephew's math skills are off the chart.
Yeah.
From those math games. Let's talk a little bit about online gambling. It's illegal, but you can still do it.
Sure it is. And yes, sure you can. The government is trying to do its best to keep that from happening. And it certainly has shut down the online gambling or the overt online gambling here in the U.S. But you can go down to the Banana Republics and get a server co-located to a net presence there and mm-hmm. be up in business in a matter of days. And these games are extremely popular.
Yeah.
I suppose I'm a cynic. I know that computers use set patterns. So I know that any game of chance isn't really a game of chance.
House always wins.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I were so inclined, I think I would go to a casino. But
right.
I don't think I'm their target audience.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you're not. Well, and then looking at, I mean, any good thing taken to excess can lead to problems. And while there's no formal diagnosis of video game addiction, there is research that suggests gambling elevates levels of dopamine in the brain, and gaming falls into that category of activity. So I guess that's something we need to be aware of, that there's a potential to spend a little too much time with the games.
Perhaps, yes. I've read some studies recently that suggest that certain game action adventure and combat games can actually be used to help reduce pain in chronic pain patients.
Oh, that's interesting.
It does stimulate the dopamine in the brain. I suspect that it might actually be a combination of that and making their mood improve by doing something they enjoy, but there is that.
Mm-hmm. The Center for Online Addiction gives some warning signs for video game addiction to include playing for increasing amounts of time, thinking about gaming during other activities, gaming to escape from real-life problems, anxiety or depression, lying to friends and family to conceal gaming, and feeling irritable when trying to cut down on gaming. So some things, I guess, to watch out for.
Absolutely. I've had readers from the paper write me about their children or grandchildren who they suspected were addicted to gaming. And one of the comments that constantly appeared in these emails was, prefers that world to this one.
Yes.
So
right.
I suppose that makes sense if you have an addictive personality and in the real world you're a 16-year-old high school student with no friends and no job and nothing to do. Being a level 80 warrior with super special armor and weapons would be a
right.
fun thing to be.
Right. Well, and one thing, last time you were here, we were talking about a young man who I believe died in a car accident and his family couldn't afford his funeral. And you told a story of how the game that he was involved with, whatever the, you know, pieces, armor, things that he had, those are actually able to be sold, and they made the money to, or with his friend's help, to pay
the
funeral.
Funeral.
So there's a lot of money involved in this sometimes.
There is, actually, and it's not always legal.
Yeah.
Because the terms of service in some games, for instance, Final Fantasy XI was very popular a few years ago, and it had a huge black market economy where literally there were server farms in China with people being paid to play the game to harvest money so that the company could sell the money online.
Wow. We have a listener sent a comment that says, child development experts have always agreed that screen media is not good for children under the age of 2 and is best limited until 5 or older. Little kids need to move and have real world experiences.
I don't necessarily disagree with that, but McGill did a study in Canada that suggested that casual gameplay over a long period of time makes you smarter or at least more causes you to pay more attention. So the end result's the same.
Yeah. And I think it makes sense. Anything in moderation. You know, you don't want your child sitting there playing the game 24/7. You want them to actually maybe get outside.
And you mean visit that room with a big blue ceiling?
Yeah, right. We talked about social games and ones you can play with friends, Scrabble, Word Chums. But there are also gaming websites, and even Facebook has a gaming area so you can play with your Facebook friends or any Facebook users, right?
It does. Evil.
Evil.
it's one of the biggest time-sucking areas of Facebook.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably one of the reasons why a a lot of corporations have banned accessing Facebook from their work networks.
Makes sense,
A lot of lost productivity there, huh? But a lot of farm crops got grown. So.
Yeah, from Farmville, right? what else haven't we touched on that we want to talk about?
Well, one of the things that we were talking about was what causes older gamers to choose a different game path than younger gamers. And I think that my experience in talking with older gamers has suggests that the thing that they want is to just pay for it once and be done with it. Mm. They don't want to have to constantly be thinking about their wallet every time they play the game. So it's economics, but in the end, I think that's not going to change. Mm. I don't think that young people are going to get any smarter about that than they are right now.
Right. So, what do you play games?
I respectfully decline to answer that question. Yeah, I do.
It's funny because when that Angry Birds game first came out, I had a relative who stayed up till like 2:30 in the morning trying to get to whatever level. And I thought, that's just insane.
Until I picked
it up myself and I went, why am I wasting so much time on this game?
It's amazing how you can pick it up for just a few levels and then look at the clock and realize an hour has passed.
It's gone by so fast. Yeah, it really does. It does take your attention, but it is a lot of fun. You just have to remember to,
to everything spend some in moderation.
Time. Yeah, it is. It is. I think I have to say I do play. I get up in the morning and I do play my Word Chum, and then in the evening, and sometimes I spend a little more time than that. But that's it. Usually it's once in the morning and then once at night.
Well, part of what I do requires me to play games.
You have to write about that.
I do. Yeah. And I also write walkthrough guides for strategy guides for the game. So I end up playing the games, but it's funny because I'll multitask. I'll throw an audiobook on my iPhone and stick it at my ear, and I'll play the game while I'm listening to a book.
So you're sort of doing two things. I wonder how much, though, would you be winning a little bit more in that game if you were totally focused?
I suspect.
Or maybe catching more in that book if you were totally focused on the book?
I suspect so.
Chris Botzebaubert is the tech columnist at the Cape Cod Times. Chris, thanks so much for being here today.
I'm glad you had me.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening. The Point airs weekdays at 9:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. We're also on Facebook at The Point, WCAI. Amy Vince produces The Point. Mindy Todd is executive producer. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.